Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer back with you alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard. It is Second Helping. It is the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Of course, Brent, a longtime college football analyst, most recently for First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Also, Brent, boy, this is getting more and more interesting too with the Heisman Trophy race. We're going to talk to Brent about that. Because it could be that we have more of a group of four situation with the Heisman Trophy than we've had in some previous years. We'll get Brent's thoughts on the Heisman race as he is a voter for the most prestigious individual honor in all of collegiate athletics. That, of course, being the aforementioned Heisman Trophy. First and foremost, so Brent, great to catch back up after a brief hiatus. Made the trip across the pond. We already have Tex Titer in the comments here checking in with us. Salutations to Tex. He's also asking about the trip across the pond. Brent, we did London, we did Florence, we did Rome, we went back to London, we saw a Jaguars win, we saw a Jaguars loss, we saw Premier League soccer, we ate a lot of pasta, and we both came back with sinus infections. So it's kind of been the trip that just keeps on giving all year round, Clark. But great trip all in all. Long trip, but very, very happy to be back stateside and talking. The one thing you and I love to talk more than anything else, and that's college football with an emphasis on Southeastern Conference football.
Yeah, great to have you back, too. It is fascinating what happens in a short period of time in this league. But I'll throw these numbers out real quick. The SEC is alive and well per television. 13 million for Georgia, Texas, viewers who watched the game. Alabama, Tennessee had a paltry 10 million, Trav. And oh, by the way, that CBS 330 game for the Big Ten had 4 million. So my question is, he asked rhetorically, is how happy are those ABC, ESPN officials? And how happy are those CBS officials about this TV move?
Well, if you're ESPN, it better be those numbers for what you paid, right?
Oh, yeah.
But anytime you're pulling over 10 million in an afternoon slot, that's huge.
It is.
Obviously, you expect a marquee matchup like Georgia, Texas in primetime to do the numbers it did. But boy, for Tennessee and Alabama there mid-afternoon to hit those type of benchmarks, that's obviously great news for ESPN with the check that it has submitted here for basically exclusive rights to the Southeastern Conference. And no shortage of storylines either as we have officially hit the midway point, moving past the midway point now. We're going to look more at a preview of week 9 coming up in the Southeastern Conference. We got 3 games featuring ranked opponents. And what's kind of crazy about this is that one of those games isn't Ole Miss, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's not ranked. Auburn, Kentucky isn't one of those games between ranked opponents. But Vanderbilt, Texas is, as we had it all of us had it this way in the preseason, that Vanderbilt would be ranked in the top 25 going into that home game coming up Saturday against the Texas Longhorns. But we will circle back and start with the Sooners, the beleaguered Sooners, Brent. We kind of warned Oklahoma Sooners back in the preseason. Might be a little bumpy in year one in the Southeastern Conference, but I don't think any of us envisioned that by the fourth or fifth game of the conference schedule, we would see South Carolina last Saturday just absolutely hammering proud Oklahoma there in Norman.
And Trav, did we think at the midseason point that Oklahoma would be firing their offensive coordinator and their quarterback's coach? That man alive, that tells you a lot about what
Seth Luttrell out. Yeah,
that's right. Oh yeah. The other and look, we thought they would have problems with their offensive line, having to rebuild it and replace all 5 starters. But the thing that's happened to them, and I don't think either one of us have ever seen this before, is basically your entire wide receiver starting unit is out. Now, some of those guys are going to be coming back, some too, which is going to be fascinating. But if you, Trav, if you want a microcosm, and again, we're not piling on here. This is just the way that it is for Oklahoma. I mean, they turned the ball over three times in the first nine plays. That's not easy to do.
No, and it seems like as much as they wanted the Michael Hawkins situation to work out at quarterback,
right?
They essentially had to go back to Jackson Arnold for the same reasons, in part, that they went to Michael Hawkins
really
to start with when you talk about turnovers and just ineffective play on the offensive side. And it's been absolutely not the kind of year that Brent Venables needed in year one in the Southeastern Conference, understanding that OU has shown its loyalty and its support to Venables, not thinking anything's going to happen to him after this season, but things can get expedited pretty quickly for a program that is as proud as Oklahoma, that is as deep pocketed as Oklahoma. It just kind of speeds things up by at least a year. We've seen it at other places Billy Napier at Florida and some other places as well. You talked about this, and we're showing it right now here on the screen, the availability report for the Southeastern Conference for this weekend. And you said it. I mean, look at the wide receivers still for Oklahoma there that continue to be out for this week. And you wonder now, Jackson Arnold, where's he at in all this? And as it relates to Latrell being dismissed midseason, it makes me wonder if perhaps there was some division between staying with Jackson Arnold, going to Michael Hawkins Jr. Now you're going back. The feedback maybe that Venables was getting from Latrell. There's just so much going on with this situation right now. And boy, to see Oklahoma again as a proud, proud program, as a 20-point dog on the road to an Ole Miss team that hasn't exactly been what a lot of people thought it would be, but it does look like for Ole Miss coming off the bye week after the tough loss to LSU in Baton Rouge, boy, you never thought you would say this about Oklahoma and the SEC, but the Sooners might be exactly what Ole Miss needs at this point.
And look, to your point, Trav, Ole Miss is not setting the woods on fire either, are they?
No.
Now, they were off last week, and here's a good indication. You asked about the Heisman earlier. Jackson Dart, early on in September, was one of the real front runners. Now, look, I'm not saying he's out of it, but he's down the list now. Both he and Jalen Milroe are nowhere near where they used to be in the Heisman Trophy odds. So, look, Ole Miss, they've got enough going on, but particularly offensively, that they've got to get back into a groove because, I mean, Ole Miss has got Florida coming up. They've got Georgia coming up. So Trev, this may be a get-right game for Ole Miss as much as it is for anybody.
And if you're Ole Miss, if I told you at this point you would have two losses, you would think you're pretty much out of the college football playoff race.
Yeah.
But with Alabama now with two losses and still a long way to go for the Crimson Tide, teams in that 1-2 loss range, you're still within contact of the college football playoff. But it's got to start with wins over teams like Oklahoma, who you should be able to take care of at home. Again, an Oklahoma team that from an offensive perspective, you just don't even know where to start right now. No. And it seems like that may be impacting the defensive side, which was so strong there for the first four or five games. But man, it's hard not to, based on human nature, not feel that, you know, when you know that your offense just can't do enough on a week in and week out basis. And as we know in the Southeastern Conference, unlike the Big 12, there's not much relief from a schedule perspective. So Ole Miss looking to get right, as Brent said, against Oklahoma on Saturday. You're right. Quarterback storyline is very, very interesting in this one as well. Let's talk Arkansas at Mississippi State. Pretty disappointing performance for Arkansas last week. Highly anticipated matchup. Battle for the boot with LSU in Fayetteville. We'll talk about LSU coming up here in just a little bit. Very impressive in that performance in Northwest Arkansas. But that was an opportunity for Arkansas at home to kind of inch closer to that bowl threshold that you got to think Sam Pittman needs this year. And so that underscores the need for this game for Arkansas on the road. Brent, what do you think? The Hogs, a 6.5-point favorite at Davis Wade Stadium. That's a 12:45 Eastern kickoff Saturday on SEC Network. Can they get that fifth win, which is going to be very important? Because when you look at the upcoming schedule, you look at the month of November for Arkansas, even though a couple of those games are at home, boy, when you see Texas on that schedule, and I think Ole Miss goes out to Fayetteville, those aren't going to be easy opportunities for the Hogs.
No, no, they're really not at all. They end with Missouri, too. Trav, do you have an answer for what happened to them in the second half?
No.
Against LSU? I mean, people were – and look, I don't – sometimes football teams just kind of hit a wall. And I don't know if that's what happened to them during that time. But look, I'm curious if you're seeing the same thing I am. There are people – this is a big upset pick for some people.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is – this Michael Van Buren, the cornerback at Mississippi State, and this is a guy that you talked about early on and what Jeff Levy can do with cornerbacks. I mean, Trav, he's among the leader, if not the leader, in the SEC in quarterback in touchdown passes.
He threw six in the last two games. I mean, he threw three against Georgia. He threw for over 300 yards against Georgia as a true freshman and three touchdowns. So. It looks like Jeff Lebby has his quarterback, and I'm gonna go with the upset side of this. I'm gonna go with Mississippi State. They've played better of late. You know, the bigger concern I have for Mississippi State continues to be, as much as anything, on the defensive side of the ball.
Oh yeah,
Coleman Hutzler, is he really the guy to run that defense over the long haul? We'll see. But it's not a hard pick to go with Michael Van Buren and Mississippi State, because Arkansas, you're starting to wonder if it's hit that sort of threshold for how good it can be over the course of the season. You get into the second half of the season, rosters like Arkansas start to take a hit. I mean, you're looking at it right now in the backfield for Arkansas, Jaquindon Jackson listed as doubtful for this game on Saturday. Arkansas's outstanding running back, Taylen Green's been nicked up, beat up a little bit now at this point at the quarterback position. And for Mississippi State, it's almost to the point of, if you don't get a league win now, when are you going to get one this season?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Well, and look, we thought, and again, people forget this, but when Jeff Levy was at Oklahoma, they ran a play about every 23 seconds.
Yep.
So their pace of play, and he's taken this year – to obviously find his quarterback and get his system in. Look, we're not predicting they're going to win the SEC, but Trav, particularly starting next year, they could cause some real problems in this league with some teams that they normally lose to.
Yeah, and they've sped up the process with Van Buren, which may end up being a silver lining for them. Blake Shapen wasn't playing bad football at the time of his injury. And I know Shapen could have a hardship type situation where he could get another year beyond the season, but I don't know how you go away from Van Buren at this point.
Yeah,
everything you're going to have invested in him through this season. It's kind of been a domino effect too, boy. I think Lebby leaving Oklahoma obviously impacted the Sooners.
No doubt.
We're seeing that in real time in the last couple of weeks with that offensive situation. And then the impact he's going to have, I think, big picture-wise on that offense at Mississippi State. Let's get into that 3:30 window. The Alabama Crimson Tide, 15th-ranked Alabama Crimson Tide. When's the last time we said something like that in relation to Alabama
as a
15th-ranked team? I don't even think in 2010, when Alabama was a three-loss team in the regular season, they ever fell to – to 15th, got to probably go back to 2005-ish or something like that. Number 21, Missouri, traveling to Tuscaloosa. Quarterback questions for both these teams. We've heard here in the last 24 hours, Pete Thamel of ESPN, Brent, reporting that it looks like Brady Cook is highly doubtful for this game with the ankle injury sustained against Auburn last week. Give him credit, came back into that game.
Oh, yeah.
Helped the Tigers get over the top against a beleaguered Auburn team there in Como. Drew Pine, man, this is a guy that's been around. He's been at Notre Dame.
Really?
Here at Missouri after a stopover at Arizona State. So if it isn't Brady Cook, it looks like it'll be the well-traveled Drew Pine behind center for Missouri.
And Trav, what about Nate Noel, that their leading rusher may not play, right?
Yeah. It's a lengthy injury list for Eli's team this week, too. And again, gutted one out, looked to be dead to rights against Auburn late in that game last week. Losing teams do what losing teams tend to do. We saw that again from Auburn. Mm-hmm. But, it speaks, I think, a little bit to the culture that Eli's established there in the last season and a half. With Missouri, that they were able to come back. Brady Cook is he's a guy that you talk about Missouri football lore and how he's going to be regarded.
Really?
And it's kind of wild considering that going into the 2023 season, there were a lot of questions about whether or not he should even be the starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. Now you fast forward 16, 17, 18 games later, Brady Cook is beloved by that fan base. So we'll see if it's Pine. You know, that line opened up Saturday at 13.5 against Alabama. It's gone to 16.5. I think that's all due to the quarterback situation. Still have Luther Burden you have to deal with, the Owies at the wide receiver position. You said it about Noel. That's a big loss for Missouri. But you wonder about just the overall psyche of this Alabama team at this point. Are they still together? There is still a lot for this team to play for. But starting with Jalen Milroe, can they pick up the pieces and sort of get back to where they were offensively? Defensively, in the loss to Tennessee last week, I thought for a half it was as good as they could play probably. The second half, some of the old issues cropped back up, couldn't stop the run well enough. And really, that even goes back, in my opinion, to the Alabama offense, because when Alabama had an opportunity in the first half to put more pressure on Tennessee offensively to go up maybe 14, 17 points there in Knoxville, give Tennessee defense credit. Alabama wasn't able to do that, but it allowed Tennessee to stay patient offensively and get around to its bread and butter eventually, and then hit the big plays with Nico through the air.
Well, several things going on here. And look, that the Alabama-Tennessee game reminded me of the Florida-Tennessee game. Florida, it was 3-0 and a half. Florida should have been ahead 21-0, as Alabama should have. And look, and we'd be looking at Tennessee in a different way if that had happened right now. Some things that really stick out, like sore thumb for Alabama, 130 out of 134 in penalties a game, almost 9 penalties a game. Obviously had 15 last week. I don't think this is a big distraction, but Kane Womack being mentioned for that Southern Miss head coaching job is out there too. There's not enough points. As you just mentioned, like 6 points off 7 turnovers over the last few games. That's not getting it done either. Give Keon Saab a lot of credit, the starting safety, playing on a broken foot.
Wow.
Third downs for Alabama. They've had the offense has had 53 third down attempts, 33 of 53 have been third and 7, and only converted 5 of 33. So really not. And look, you and I have been covering this for years. We said this before this game, that the team that had the most rushing was probably going to win the game. And that was tried and true. Tennessee had over 200 yards. Bama had 64. But, Trev, you put all these things together that you and I just talked about, and you can see why this team's struggling right now.
You can. Really struggling to run the football on a consistent basis once you get beyond the quarterback position. I thought Jam Miller in the second half last week showed you why at this point right now, if there is a lean between him and Justice Haynes, I would want him carrying the football more because yards after contact, maximizing opportunities. I just think he's that guy. of the two. Justice Haynes, certainly still a place for him. Had a nice touchdown run. More of that, I thought, had to do with Caden Proctor and C.J. Dupree doing an excellent job there in the red zone of run blocking from the left side. So, you know, it goes back to Milroe, too. And where is he at in terms of his viability as a runner as compared to just 3 or 4 weeks ago? Because it doesn't look like he's in the same place, whether it's mental, physical, combination of both. You know, if you're going to lean on the quarterback position to be that impactful in your run game, and then it diminishes by a good bit, that's hard to cover for. And especially in red zone situations, because he had been so, so good in those situations. And now we see zero rushing touchdowns against Tennessee. Give Tennessee, again, a lot of credit, because we heard all offseason, into the preseason, no. This is the year Tennessee front seven defensive line is going to be legit. And I thought that was as big of a difference in the game Saturday as anything, too. As the game moved along, Tennessee was more like Alabama's defensive line over the last 15 or 20 years.
True.
And Alabama's was more like what Tennessee had put out there over the last 15 or 20 years. It was a little bit of a reversal there. But, yeah, I mean, with Jalen, you need him to be a big part of the run game. And if he can't be, I don't know what the answer is. Right. I don't know if – I'm not a big quarterback package guy. I'm not at all. But if you're going to depend on the quarterback position that much, and for whatever reason you can't continue to get it out of Jalen, maybe you need to package something for Ty Simpson.
Maybe
you go with some Wildcat. You know, just put a back in the gun with the extra blocker and do some things that way. But for Jalen, I just think, as big as anything, the confidence late in the game, really throughout the game, it seemed to fall off. But when they still had a chance, down seven the shots of him on the broadcast just didn't speak to a guy that you felt like at that point, we're going to go down the field. We're going to do what we need to do. And again, Tennessee's defense deserves credit for that, because I think they had a big role in kind of impacting the psyche. We'll see. You know, it's a game. If Brady Cook doesn't play, Alabama should certainly be in a good position playing at home. You got a bye week coming up. You know, if you can get to this bye week before LSU, that could be massively helpful. Yeah. And then with two losses, perhaps you run the table in the month of November with that road game at LSU, and you're right there in the college football playoff mix when all is said and done. How about this matchup of ranked opponents, Brent Beard? Number 5, Texas, traveling to Nashville. That sudden pit that has become there on the west end of Nash Vegas. The 25th ranked Vanderbilt Commodores ready to host the Longhorns. Texas coming off that loss to Georgia. Boy, Georgia humbled Texas, I would say, especially at the line of scrimmage. Sark can dial it up, but boy, if you're not up to the task up front against Kirby Smart teams, you will be exposed. That happened to Texas last Saturday night in Austin. Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning, that was an interesting situation, I thought, last Saturday night. Brent, what's your sort of level of concern for Texas coming out of that game?
Well, look, when you get – Trav, it's one thing to lose a close game when you're playing well, but when you get pummeled at the line of scrimmage and you get physically manhandled, I really think that's a major story for this. And Sark, to his credit, Quinn Ewers was struggling. He put Arch in for a little bit just to give him a breather, and then he put him back in. He played better, which I wonder if Alabama might be looking at something like that. But as far as Texas is concerned, I mean, you would think that would be too many wide receivers, that would just be too much offensively that Vandy would have to deal with. But look, the thing you and I have talked about for years, when you basically run a wishbone the way that Vandy does, and you're just getting off an emotional loss to a very physical football team, Trent, that's my number one question for this. In the midst of that, behemoth 26,000 people who are going to be there, most of them Longhorn fans. I'm just wondering, particularly without Bo Davis, who is now at LSU, defensive line coach. How long can Vandy and our guy Diego stay in this game by doing what they do, and how quick is Texas going to be able to solve this triple option they run?
I think a couple things working in favor of Sark this week. He's got the Bama tape where he can show his guys that, look, if we don't show up and are engaged, and really starting earlier in the week with your prep, because that is where it's toughest, as you said, going from a prep for what Georgia does to what Vandy does. You know, it's two entirely different challenges altogether. That helps Sark. I think also, you know, Vandy's, I think, dealing with some more things from a health perspective. Mm-hmm. I know they're supposed to get a couple guys back defensively that they didn't have this past week. That's a good thing. But I think one of the things, and it shouldn't have mattered, Alabama should beat Vandy. And I love Diego. It's well documented. Mm-hmm. Not a bigger fanboy for Diego out there than probably me. But you saw them earlier in the season. And even a month with a team like Vandy can make a difference in terms of health.
No question.
You know, can they sustain? Like I talked about with Arkansas earlier. If Alabama sees, let's say, and it shouldn't matter, I understand that. So the Bama fans are like, I get that. But I'm just saying, if you saw Vandy, say, in November as compared to late September or early October,
no question,
you're probably going to see a different team after it has run much of the gauntlet of an SEC season. So a couple of things I think working for Sark, I'll never totally rule out Diego. But I don't think that this is going to be the sort of pit game for Texas like it was, let's say, for Alabama. What about primetime? Saturday night, Kyle Field, LSU. I got that wrong on the point spread. That's obviously a 2.5-point spread there for Texas A&M playing at home there. I had two spreads in there. I had LSU minus 13.5, and I had Texas A&M minus 2.5. So kind of just take your pick, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the Aggies, as a slight home favorite, seem to be riding a lot of momentum after that win over Missouri a couple weeks ago. LSU, likewise, you know, LSU is a team that after that loss to USC in Vegas in the season opener, we kind of put on the back shelf and said, we'll check back in with you come mid-October. Well, here we are checking back in with the LSU Tigers and just still sitting there with that one loss and in great shape where the college football playoff is concerned.
This is a fascinating game in a lot of ways. That's almost flying under the radar. This is the ninth time these two teams have met as AP-ranked teams, and LSU is 8-0. I don't take a lot of stock into that because it was in the past. But at the same time, this is – Trev, isn't this going to be fascinating for the line of scrimmage? I mean, LSU has easily one of the best offensive lines, and they've kept Garrett Nussmeier clean with a lot of this against this A&M defensive line with Nick Skirton, the transfer from the Big Ten, who has really done some good things. And listen, what about this Cade Durham guy at running back who is stepping up 100 yards? This is a I'm really, you know, everybody knows Brian Kelly. They don't know Elko, and Elko has done a really good job at A&M. You know, he doesn't have this bravado that you had with Jimbo when he was with A&M. Now Elko just kind of wins more. I'll certainly give him that. But Trav, my big thing for this game would be that line of scrimmage between the LSU offensive line and the A&M defensive line, and I think whoever wins that matchup will go a long way in winning this game.
Yeah, and boy, give LSU staff a lot of credit because the injuries there for a minute looked like it was going to take the Tigers out with Harold Perkins Jr. out for the season, John Emery Jr., the running back, out for the season, Jacobian Guillory, the defensive tackle, out. And they have found it. What they wanted Blake Baker to be for that defense, he has been. We've talked about Bo Davis coming home to LSU to coach that defensive front, or what's left of it. Boy, Greg Penn, Whit Weeks at the linebacker position. Yep. This is a team that is steadily improved. Still a lot out in front of LSU, including this game, and then the home game against Alabama coming up in early November. So still a lot of the story to be told for this LSU team. But you're right, from a line of scrimmage perspective, this should be a fun one. You got a couple of Texas gunslingers at the quarterback position.
That's right.
Connor Wigman, you know, Nussmeier, although, yeah, Nussmeier, he actually grew up a little bit in Tuscaloosa when his dad, Doug, was the offensive coordinator for Nick Saban there for the Crimson Tide. But a couple of good quarterbacks. You've got some star power at the wide receiver position. Should be a fun Saturday night in Aggie land. I'm going to go LSU on the road. And you know the thing about LSU, too, that we always talk about the wins of note, right? We'll talk about LSU and that just amazing home win over Ole Miss a couple weeks ago for a long time. But it's sometimes the wins that you don't talk about as much. I go back to LSU somehow beating South Carolina on the road. In a game that looked like they were done. And think about, you talk about changing narratives and perspectives of teams. What happens with LSU if they don't somehow pull that game in Columbia out of the fire a month and a half ago or so? Boy, they're all big. It just goes to show in the Southeastern Conference. Let's talk Auburn at Kentucky. Mentioned this earlier in the program. Auburn's in that place as a team that loses a lot, that kind of comes up with new and inventive ways to lose games. But, you know, Kentucky right now, for a Mark Stoops team, especially after the win at Ole Miss earlier in the season, you kind of thought that might be a springboard game for the Wildcats. That has not been the case. Had the home loss to Vandy shortly thereafter, and then to go on the road and just get smoked by a Florida team that really Kentucky fans had kind of gotten used to beating after that 30-year losing streak or whatever it was.
First of all, here, condolences and prayers for Coach Stoops at Kentucky. His mother died this week. A lot of people may miss that. In a name dear to us, Trav, Evelyn D.D. Stoops. How about that? But again, you know, when you look at where this Auburn team is and where they're going. Now, first of all, Auburn's won 9 straight games at Kentucky in 18 of 19 in the series. So they've had a stranglehold on it. And boy, Trav, what about this? In Kentucky's last 12 SEC home games, 2-10.
Yeah.
So now look, I love Stoops in a lot of ways, but both these teams have really struggled in a lot of ways. But Trav, the other thing is, listen, can Auburn invent another way to lose a football game?
That's what I'm saying. That's what losing teams do. And I'm very tempted. Even earlier in the show, I was thinking, you know, I'm probably going to go Auburn here against Kentucky, but man, it's hard.
It is, isn't it?
When you see games, continuous performances that go like last week's did in Como. I think Auburn's plenty good enough to beat Kentucky.
Yeah, sure they are.
I just don't know if Auburn thinks Auburn's good enough to get it done. You know, and for Kentucky, this is big because we talked about that lengthy, decade-longish bowl game streak that the Wildcats have had under Bob Stoops. And Kentucky comes into this game at 3-4. So even if you beat Auburn Saturday for your fourth win, you still got Vanderbilt, or excuse me, let me get this straight with the Kentucky schedule here. Even if you do take care of business at 3-4 against Auburn coming up on Saturday night, that would be your fourth win. You still got at Tennessee, at Texas, and Louisville at home. Now, ooh, Murray State, you're going to get, if you win this game, you're going to get your fifth win against Murray State in November. But Tennessee on the road, Texas on the road, Louisville to cap it. It's going to be tough to get to six, even if you win this game against Auburn.
Yeah. Well, the Kentucky defense is what they've leaned on, but the offense and the defense, Trav, to your point, collapsed in Gainesville.
That was the surprising thing about the performance in Gainesville. And look, DJ Lagway, boy, he is a star. I think he's already a star, not a rising star as a true freshman. We've seen some true freshman quarterback play this year, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Between Van Buren of Mississippi State, Lagway. I guess I'm going to go Kentucky here. I'm tempted to just go Auburn straight up, but it's a rough one between the Cats and the Tigers on Saturday night on the SEC Network. Brent, it's also a week of bye weeks in the Southeastern Conference. Tennessee on the bye among those. And, of course, Florida and Georgia both on the bye with the cocktail party coming up in Jacksonville a week from Saturday.
Yeah, and I still say that's the biggest event in Jacksonville, where Travis and I are, of any time during the year. And I will say this, I'm curious if Pop's resurrected his Gator hopes a little bit, but you know, the thing you and I talked about in the beginning of the season is, okay, if it's November and they look better, I mean, that's what I've heard in Publix and in church and in the gym and everywhere else. Well, the truth of the matter is right now they do look better.
They do.
You know, with Lagway, their defense is certainly playing better. Ron Roberts and that crew have simplified it at that point too. And they brought up some of their wide receivers are. So look, I don't think they're going to beat Georgia by any stretch of the imagination. That game's too important to Kirby, to say the least. But I give Napier some credit going into that game. They are better with the promise of maybe doing more in November than we thought they could.
Yeah, and the pathway for Napier to somehow survive that start was once – Mertz went out, and I thought he was very fair to Graham Mertz.
He was.
And understandably so. But now with Mertz definitely done for the season, the pathway really was always going to be DJ Lagway and how he performed in this offense. And so it's still doable because Florida State is not good. That looked a lot different back in August than it does now. But you still got to go to Texas. Right after you take on Georgia in Jacksonville. I agree with you on the Georgia game for Florida, at least early. Kind of like what we were talking about earlier with when you see teams on the schedule sometimes is either to your benefit or detriment. I don't think you want to see Georgia right now because not to take away from Alabama's win, but Georgia from a health perspective, especially probably more so on defense and still trying to figure out some things on offense after all the departures, that team looks different right now.
It does.
It looks different. Now, look, you know, got to get better play, more consistent play at the quarterback position than what Georgia has really gotten throughout the season based on what we expected out of 15. And he made some plays late against Texas, though. He made some competitive winning plays that you need from your quarterback with his legs. As much as anything, but it's at least made it interesting. South Carolina also on the bye with four wins now. That performance at Oklahoma last week that led to some seismic shifts there in Norman in the immediate aftermath. But even for South Carolina to try to gain bowl eligibility once it gets into the month of November, Texas A&M ranked. Missouri ranked, Vanderbilt ranked, Clemson ranked. Now, the good news for South Carolina is a couple of those games, Texas A&M, Missouri are in Como. Although you could say South Carolina has been a better team on the road.
Yeah, this season. That's a good point.
Could it be really Alabama happened. On the road, smashed Oklahoma on the road, smashed Kentucky on the road. So we'll see how that goes for the Gamecocks. Tennessee, as much as anything, you like the bye week for them because the celebration didn't seem to stop in the immediate aftermath of the win over the Crimson Tide. And so got some big ones for Georgia and Tennessee, really. You're going to have Georgia, Tennessee mid-November sitting out there. It's going to be a good one as well. Anything else, Brent, before we get out of here?
Now I know this is kind of a regional game, but you and I understand the importance of this. We've got a game between Florida State and Miami coming up on Saturday night. And I understand this, no one's talking about, but you and I being historians of the game, Trav, we understand this used to be in the day, as we like to say, this used to be one of the major games of the season with both teams, what, Trav, in the top 10, if not the top five. Well, we're nowhere near that right now, but at least wanted to mention that we still have an undefeated Miami team, but we've got an absolutely abysmal Florida State team. But just for the sake of history, I wanted to throw out that no one will talk about it, but we've seen that game in better days, haven't we?
Far better. There was a time Miami and Florida State was kind of like what Alabama, Georgia has been.
Well, absolutely.
Here in the last 7 or 8 years. So no doubt you think about the NFL draft picks back in those runs for those teams. But, boy, Florida State, you talk about a 180. And you know what? I get the sense, for me, Florida State a year ago is Miami this year. Miami this year is Florida State a year ago.
Good point.
The same team to me. Starts with the quarterback position. That's why Florida State has no chance, in my opinion, Saturday night, is because you're not gonna beat Cam Ward, I don't think, with the quarterback situation that Florida State has. You know, he is to Miami what a healthy Jordan Travis was to Florida State a year ago. He just makes them very, very tough to beat. Now, Miami's gotten quite a few breaks, it seems like, as well to this point. So we'll see how that goes. Well, Brent, as always, a lot of fun here on the channel. Thank you for taking time. Great to reconnect. And
absolutely.
We'll be back next week.
Good. Can't wait, bud. Thanks much. Have a great week.
For Brent Beard, Travis Schreier, thanking you once again for joining us. And as Tex Titer says right here, and we appreciate it, Tex, hit a thumbs up for us if you don't mind. A like would help us out tremendously. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already here for Schreier on YouTube. And turn on those notifications. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. For Brent, Travis, thanks again. Until next week, so long, everybody.